Hey everyone, welcome to Taking Stock. Really excited for today's discussion. It is with Evan Shirley. Evan is a manager at Clarkson Consulting and one of our thought leaders in the firm, actually around a variety of topics. This specific case, we're going to be talking around direct-to-consumer, something that he has quickly become very knowledgeable and passionate about. Direct-to-consumer, if you follow the consumer products industry, you know how strategic of an imperative this is and the competitive advantage that you are able to realize if you're able to do this well, for a lot of reasons. Most pointedly would be around your ability to engage with consumers in a more intimate way. So we're going to talk about the strategic imperative. We're going to talk about the benefit to be realized. We're going to talk about how does this compete with your broader omnichannel story with brick and mortar and with Amazon and a bunch of other topics. Again, you're going to thoroughly enjoy Evan's perspective. And look forward to today's discussion. Hey, Evan, welcome to Taking Stock.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How's your break going?
Going well, enjoying some California sunshine. How about yourself?
Jersey, not necessarily sunshine, but sleep and relaxation, so that's good. So really looking forward to our conversation today around a topic that you and I have talked about a lot. We're working together around this topic, and it's a burning platform for any consumer products company today, and that's direct-to-consumer. There's so much happening in today's market, so I was doing some research. I don't know if the numbers are exact, but I saw some estimations that 12,000 retail locations are expected to close in the coming year, and retail sales growth is slowing, and retailers are continuing to offer their own brands to compete. There's increased competition from digitally native, you know, vertical brands. So obviously it goes without saying that more and more CPG companies are accelerating their direct-to-consumer efforts, but what are some of the market dynamics and consumer trends that, from your perspective, that are driving, you know, the growth of DTC brands?
Yeah, and thanks for having me on, by the way. I'm excited speak with you. I think this is a great question because it's one that I know a lot of clients and just a lot of companies in general are having around, what is this? How should I know if I get involved? What's driving it? What are the benefits? So I think it's a good starting point for any business that's heard about those benefits to start learning more. I think, you know, if you went out and you asked 100 people why direct to consumer, I would guess one of the things you'd hear back is around customer centricity, right? It's a term that's just like gone through the roof. And while I think that's a good guiding principle in building out a business like that, I think the reality is that that's overly simplistic to say why companies want to go after direct to consumer. In reality, I think it's a lot of different trends coming together. I guess from the consumer's angle, there's certainly an evolution in the needs and expectations of the consumer and the business trying to address those. So that's definitely one big area of change over time. I think also when you think out to competitive pressures and industry dynamics, we're seeing new strategies take place. And certainly you mentioned already the digitally native brands concept. There's a lot going on there too. That's driving it. And I think third, and maybe this is a bit integrated into the first two, but there's just technology and data. You know, there's that hyperabundance of data and how it's permeating the way businesses make decisions and go to market.
Yeah. So I want to dive specifically into the consumer needs and expectations. You hit upon it at a high level. And, you know, because it is tough to, and we'll hit upon this a little bit later, but it's obviously really tough to engage with consumers nowadays. All right. Consumers, their loyalty is fleeting. They expect, you know, what they want, where they want it, when they want it. So the ability for companies to be able to engage with consumers in more of an intimate, direct, one-to-one way is a huge opportunity for companies, but also a great challenge. Talk a little bit about how direct-to-consumer could potentially unlock that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're so right. You know, those expectations are rising, not by any part, thanks to anyone like Amazon's of the world. We hear about it every day. I think I saw something recently that said Amazon was mentioned in like 20 to 25% of public company earnings calls. So you're seeing across the board, crazy amount of attention to how that's changing the game. But the reality of it is, you know, those we expect immediate information, immediate answers, how and when we want them. And I think that extends out to the products that we buy. We expect it to be for us, personalized. And D2C can be very valuable when CPG companies can use it to create products based on the learnings they have from D2C. The idea being, you know, that you collect data about how consumers engage with that product, what they think about the product, the features, the benefits, and then you can use that to better address real needs that the consumer has and make meaningful connections with the consumers that ultimately promote brand love. And then that, of course, triggers growth, which everybody's looking for all the time. And regardless of whether that's a small little incremental growth to your overall business or it's transformational growth, everybody's excited about it because for the most part, it's a much better margin profile than other channels, you know, and who wouldn't want that, right?
Yeah, totally. But it's not just about growth though, because I think that
Agreed. You
know, some of the research that I did shows that, you know, a lot of companies feel that direct to consumer is going to be the key that reignites growth. And I think we would agree that certainly it's part of the growth engine. But if you think about your direct to consumer strategy, specifically your brand's website as a means to be able to drive growth, at least kind of direct correlation to growth, you might be searching and find that hard to find. It's a little bit more complex than that, right?
It definitely is more complex than that. I mean, there's a lot of tangible and intangible reasons, and it's great to say that direct to consumer is going to be the solution to every problem and it's going to be the holy grail. And it really depends on, I think, the mission that you're stating that channel to have. So I think it's really important for businesses to think about, you know, D2C, what do they really want it to be? What role is it going to play? How will it inform other parts of the business? And then overall, you can start to build out a strategy and ultimately an operating model to support it that helps you get to those goals. So I would definitely agree that it's not primarily growth that needs to be the only reason, but there's a lot of other intangible, intangible you'd want to go after it for.
Yeah. So, and Evan, you and I have talked about this, but I'll share with our audience here my experience. So I recently bought a product directly from a manufacturer on their website and paid the cost that I thought was a fair cost. And I paid shipping fees, and it was going 3 to 5 days for me to receive that product. Then as a comparison, I went on Amazon and I bought that exact same product for approximately half the price.
Yeah,
and I bought that product, not only half the price, but free shipping, and it was shipped out to me the next day via Amazon. So my question to you is, how do you manage a DTC strategy in conjunction with, you know, those competitive pressures, specifically of Amazon, and how do you compete, and how do you develop that value proposition for your consumers through your direct-to-consumer site? Because again, it can't be about price. We're not going to, as a manufacturer, you're not going to be able to compete on price. You're not going to be able to compete from a shipping perspective. So what is that? What does the strategy look like in consideration of that?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I think it's one a lot of people are soul searching about. I think as a first step, you've got to understand what we just said before that around what's the mission of the channel for the company. Because you're right, if you go to head to head with Amazon or the Amazons of the world, you're going to get crushed on things like shipping or things like endless aisle or things like cross-selling. So you've really got to understand what your product has to offer and what its strengths and weaknesses are, and then how that compares to Amazon and what their strengths and weaknesses are. And I think the goal is really to play a different game than they do, find different and appropriate places to play along the, you know, the sales funnel. So I'll make an example. Let's say you're selling like a luxury good, like a high-end watch or something. And let's say you're interested in driving loyalty and advocacy post-purchase. Maybe you have really valuable consumers over the lifetime as well as just one purchase. And if you buy that on Amazon, the follow-on experience that Amazon has with you is kind of the similar follow-on experience that you're going to have if you buy toilet paper from them. You know, you might get an email saying, here's your order information. You might still have the ability to reach out to customer service and get things fixed if there's an issue. But if you're that CPG company or you're operating that brand and you want to create for your company because you know your brand and you know your consumer, you want to create like a high touch follow-up to check in on the customer and really delight them. Amazon would not dedicate the resources to doing that. But because you know your brand and you know this is one of the areas that they don't play, you can kind of play a different game there. And you can have that follow-up call and delight that consumer. And that's, of course, an example from post-purchase. But like, no matter what part of the sales funnel you look at, I think it's having those frank conversations around where can we delight the customer? Where can we make the path to purchase as seamless as possible?
Yeah, and then you alluded to it before, kind of data and technology could also be a huge part of this, because one of the things that I've always thought about is the ability to be able to leverage direct to consumer as almost a test and learn vehicle, the opportunity to pilot new experiences, to test new innovative products. Talk a little bit about how companies could potentially,
absolutely,
leveraging data, leveraging technology, kind of think about direct to consumer as a kind of test and learn, almost an innovation lab, with consumers.
I think this is one of the most valuable potential use cases of D2C, and one that, you know, a lot of companies are interested in. And it's really, it's a nice thing to be able to send up the flagpole and say, look, we're going to gain these insights. It's a lot more difficult to actualize it, but when you can, it can be tremendously valuable. So I guess when you think of it, you have this hyperabundance of data that you're collecting because you're no longer going through a retailer, going through a middle party. You collect that data, and if you have it and you can engage with those consumers like we were talking about before, you can make more informed decisions around product and how you develop the product, and also marketing, how you message the product. And digitally native companies, ones that we were talking about earlier, have been doing this since inception. You know, they were born into the digital age where data has always been a part of their business. It's a core capability. It's something that everyone in their organization has to have as part of their DNA. And I think you're seeing more and more companies realize that they can, you know, reinforce their innovation process with this, where the D2C insights, if we want to call them that, they're captured through the channel. They're evaluated by a cross-functional team that has representation of all the people in the business, because you can learn from them in every part of your business, not just the traditionally commercial side. And then ultimately, they're nurtured through the company's R&D or digital arm. And that can really help you convert more customers and better engage with them and develop products that really hit on their needs. So definitely a huge opportunity.
Yeah. So do you think that do you think companies need to look at the products that they're carrying on their direct-to-consumer site and look at them as kind of exclusive? Because when I always think about it, and we always talked about this, forget about direct-to-consumer, but if you just looked at, you know, brick and mortar versus Amazon or traditional e-commerce, you know, the discussion of product exclusivity is one that, you know, always came up. But with direct-to-consumer, do you recommend for companies that the products that they carry are going to be different than what you would find on an Amazon, or different than you might find when you walk down the halls of a traditional brick and mortar store? Or is it not that simple? And ultimately, you need to think about this, you know, more holistically from an omnichannel perspective.
Yeah, it's a great question, because this is where the realities of, you know, running a traditional business meet the aspirational excitement and energy around D2C. So it's like that collision area. And I think it is more complex than just saying, you know, this is going to be purely incremental. We're going to add our entire portfolio on there in every single configuration that we have, and consumers are going to go buy it. Because the reality is the Amazons, the Walmarts, or whomever your largest, you know, traditional customers are going to want a piece of that action. So I think portfolio is a key piece of it. But before you even get to portfolio, I think you have to, A, really have that understanding and alignment across your business of what's the mission of the channel. We've talked about it a few times. But actually doing that exercise across all the channels in which you sell. So making sure that everyone understands, you know, what are the different occasions, or what's the path to purchase in the areas that you're inviting to engage with the consumer. Then I think you can go to portfolio at that point before you start setting off alarm bells down in Amazon's headquarters. And there's certainly, you know, there's certainly different ways to approach it. I guess one workaround is you can create price differentials. They're not always attractive, but you'll likely take less heat for it if you're priced significantly above, or maybe you make custom packs or something of that variety where it isn't exactly the same. But creating a true differentiated offering in that respect can be very valuable. So like I think about gifting occasions for a company where that's not traditionally their occasion that they're trying to drive. And then creating a special experience around that. Like one company that does this really well is Hershey's, where mm-hmm. they understand, you know, the impulse component of their business. They understand the traditional restocking component of their business, but then they also want to create something special that they can pull through D2C and not necessarily cannibalize from the other parts of their business.
Yeah, and I think it's that's a great example. And I would also argue that if you do direct to consumer well, it's going to let you understand your consumers in ways that you wouldn't otherwise have understood, which is going to make you a more valuable partner to your retail customers.
Absolutely.
It's going to give you the insights that's going to hopefully help you create a better experience in store or online or through the different channels to which you'd be just selling your products.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is absolutely true. You end up having this net benefit across the board. It's a win-win-win. You gain, you know, closer relationships with your consumers. They get better products and services and engagement that really activates them. And then for your traditional business too, you come with meaningful insights that can help them grow their businesses as well.
Yeah. And this is obviously all thinking about it from a why perspective. Certainly going forward, I would welcome the opportunity to chat with you around the how do you do this? Because obviously this is wonderful to talk about in theory. But there's a lot of complexities and hard decisions that companies need to make when you think about what steps do you want to take first, what technologies do you want to deploy, mm-hmm. and what are some of the hard decisions that you need to make as a business.
Totally.
So certainly would love to talk to you, about that in a different discussion.
Absolutely. I think the beautiful thing about that bridge between strategy and actualizing it is there's a few key components that remain the same. I think we talked a lot today about the consumer. And having that consumer at the center is great all the way to pull through from aspiration to making all those choices. And I definitely welcome talking about how we've done some of that investigation in the past and helped set companies off on a path where everybody benefits.
Awesome. Well, thank you on behalf of our listeners. Thank you for a great discussion as always. And you will definitely be coming back around this topic and many others. So thanks again, Evan, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your time off and talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you. All right, same to you. So that was Evan Shirley. Thanks again, Evan, for an amazing discussion on direct-to-consumer. As we mentioned at the end of the chat, there's an incredible amount of complexity that goes along with the decisions that you need to make. And then the next discussion, which we'll have, which will be how do you go about doing it and how do you execute against that strategy? Look forward to those discussions and others here on Taking Stock, and we'll talk soon.